Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Tuesday afternoon. Joining me from Naples, Florida, is front office insider Bobby Marks. Hi, Bobby.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Good. I'm actually at the Footprint Center. It's a couple hours before Game 5 here. I'm in the visiting media interview room, so Ty Lue will be sitting here in a few hours. Absolutely not interested in answering questions about Kawhi and Paul George's health. and I understand. So, anyway, joining us from Oakland, California, where he just flew cross country. He was courtside last night for the Heat-Bucks game in one of the games that I suspect you might remember for a while, Anscape's Mark J. Spears.
What's happening, man? I'm fresh. I got 3 hours of sleep.
What time did your flight leave Miami?
You'd be proud of me.
I am proud. That's how we roll.
Yeah.
That's how we roll.
If I would have known you were in Miami, I would have sent a car for you. You could have driven across Alligator Alley after the game. We could have had breakfast this morning in Naples.
It would have been at 3 a.m. My flight left at 6. But, like, Bobby, I think of you like Central Florida. I don't think of you as South Florida. I'm bad with Florida geography. So
Dr. Jack used to make that trip all the time.
That's right.
I was looking for somebody to get a beverage with Sunday night, too, man. I would have loved to have done that with you. My bad. Now I know.
I mean, Bobby's a very jovial guy, very smart, learned a lot. I don't know if it's worth driving across Alligator Alley. Yeah. You can just, you know, you can both enjoy.
That is a long ride. It's not a long ride. You're just counting mile markers.
Oh, man.
And it's dark.
It is dark. I've done it at night, too. All right. So, Spears, what a game for you to be at, man. What a game. Hugely consequential, but I'm just going to ask you what it was like to be in there for that.
I mean, Brian, it reminded me of those Heat games we were going to 10 years ago. It reminded me of those Heat games we were going to like 15, 20 years ago. It was absolutely electric in there. And I really thought when the Bucks came out in the fourth quarter and nailed that three-pointer, it was over. In fact, I was sitting next to the legend, Tom Joyner, who I'm doing an Anscape story on. And also Jamal Mashburn and his wife. And I was like, game's over after that three-pointer. And Jamal Mashburn's wife turned to me and goes, if you're going to be negative and you need to leave. Like, I was like, all right, my bad. But them dudes came back. I mean, even with 6 minutes left, what were they? They were down a hefty portion. But, you know, Martin was great. Like, people talked about Jimmy in that fourth quarter. I thought Martin was amazing, too. And it was just like the Bucks just looked so dominant. And then all of a sudden, they just, like, ran out of juice, ran out of gas. And Jimmy just was like, I thought that performance I saw from him in the bubble would be the best Jimmy performance that I would ever see. When he just like ran out of gas at the end, that famous photo. But this topped that. I mean, to have the greatest Heat performance record ever in the playoffs, that's saying a lot. That's one of the greatest playoff performances ever. And to have that seat and to hear that crowd and emotion, and man, it was as special. It's probably the most special individual performance that I've seen covering this league for, you know, 24 years. And that's saying a lot. I've seen a lot of special nights, but if he doesn't put the team on his back, they don't win. And that's what he did.
So we talked about this a little bit before we came on here about what else is up there from what you've seen. I think you and I might previously have had the same number one, but yeah. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Yeah, no, the number one greatest playoff performance I ever saw, it just always comes to my mind when I think about it, Brian. We were both at the game, May 18, 2008, Game 7 between the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Boston Celtics, who would end up being champions. And they had that – it reminded me of that Dominique versus Bird duel, but this time it was LeBron and Paul Pierce. And LeBron put 45, game-high 45. It was incredible. I don't know if that was a game where he dunked on KG.
But no, that was in Cleveland, that game.
Yeah.
No, that was Kevin Harlan's No Regard for Human Life.
Yeah.
That was that dunk. Yeah.
But that to me, was LeBron at his best, and he's still doing amazing things. But that to me was when he was probably the most intimidating as a player. Was in that series, he had 45. Paul Pierce dropped 41 in a 97-92 barn burn.
I know.
Like, didn't even reach 100 points, but that the intensity of that game is the amazing duel between those guys. And I mean, LeBron couldn't get over the finish line, but I just remember how just Boston was just so good defensively, and he was just so ferocious in that game. And until Jimmy Butler's night, that would have been my number one.
Well, two games in that building. One was that game. Actually, three games in that building. Three games in the TD Garden would rank in my top three that I've seen in person. One was that game. And by the way, don't hold me this exact, but I want to say about 2 minutes left, Celtics by two. Cavs had the ball. LeBron took a three from the left wing. And back then we sat on the baseline right next to the Celtics bench, if you remember.
Great seat.
So the ball, it was right in front of us, and I was watching the ball come. I had a perfect angle on it, and I swear I thought it was in to put the Cavs up one, and it just hit the side of the rim. So he almost scored even more. Then game six, 2012, Heater down 3-2. LeBron in that building scores 17 in the first quarter or something like that. Yeah. And on his way to the 46 points, I think it was. A vitally important game in his career because he hadn't won yet. Yeah. And if they lost that game, which was on the road, you know, in a place where he had not been able to avoid elimination several times, he'd played several eliminations in games in Boston against that team and lost. If he had lost that game, then he's out. For 2 years in a row in Miami, you know, this has been discussed ad nauseum, but Chris Bosh probably gets traded, etc. Instead, he wins, and then the Heat win game seven, and then we take the cup finals in five. And then last year, and I'll put this right up there, Jimmy Butler, game six, Eastern Conference Finals, I believe he had 46 on a bad knee. Like, you know, he got hurt like in game two of that series, and like games three, four, five, he could barely move. Like, he was dragging that leg up. We thought it was over. The effort that he put forth in that game was unbelievable. Like, that was jaw-dropping. I don't remember all of his stats, but he made a bunch of defensive plays. To me, I remember writing that night, there's a hallway, Championship Alley, that runs from the Heat, when the Heat come off the court, from the Heat bench all the way back to their locker room. And there's life-size, wall-size photos of these great moments in Heat history. There's a photo of LeBron that night in 2012. There's a photo of Udonis Haslem bleeding, you know, in a playoff game. And I remember saying they got to make room on that wall for Jimmy Butler for this game, because that was that much of a performance. And so that was a game that I witnessed. These are games I witnessed in person. Yeah. This one I didn't, obviously. I was here in Phoenix. Yeah. I got to say that it was funny. Spears, right after I left, my hotel room, I watched the game in my hotel room, both games last night, then the Lakers Grizzlies game. And as I was leaving my hotel room, I was going out to meet up with somebody, because it wasn't that late here. And I ran into the referees for tonight's game had just watched those two games and were just like so jacked up about, I mean, I don't think I'm talking out of school. They were just really jacked up about how great the games were.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. You know, like, we were on the off night and everybody was watching it.
Let me add this too.
Yeah.
The moment that stood out to me last night was, what's that video game where they're like, he's on fire? You know what I mean?
NBA Jam.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like Jimmy was in like NBA Jam, man. And he's torching Drew Holiday. Like, you know how good a defender Drew Holiday is?
He's the best.
He goes, he's screaming, he can't guard me. He can't guard me. I'm like, damn.
He can guard you, but just not right now.
Yeah, yeah. Like, for him to be on fire like that, where, like, Drew couldn't even say nothing. Drew just.
Right.
It was like an N1 play. He just, hey, man.
So, Bobby, the thing about Mike Budenholzer is that he has been known in the past to be resistant to changing his defensive strategy. Sort of famously, when he had that 60-win Hawks team when he was coaching in Atlanta, they played the Cavs in the conference finals, and the Cavs, like, set every record in the book for three-point shooting, and he just refused to change his defense. And that happened last night again. The Heat have shot in these first four games. There's some historic numbers about how good they're shooting from three-point range. So when you're double-teaming Jimmy Butler, you are running a risk. But at some point, you know, it's kind of like, you know, that game in San Francisco a couple nights ago, Draymond Green was like, look, we are not letting De'Aaron Fox beat us on that elbow jumper. So if Harrison Barnes or somebody else is going to hit it, he was going to hit it, but we are not letting Fox do it. And I respected Draymond for saying that. And I'm just kind of surprised that they didn't make someone else do it, Bobby, because Jimmy was awesome, but the Bucks were kind of bleeped around and found out, to use the parlance of our times.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was. I mean, the Milwaukee, for a team that's won a championship and basically has the same parts out there, I mean, their offense went out the window, right? I mean, it was like a team who had basically the Butler play in the crowd basically threw them off kilter here, and they didn't adjust. You know, I think they didn't get the ball out of Jimmy's hands. You could have made the argument, do you put Giannis on him, right? I mean, like, do you make that argument there? I didn't like Giannis bringing the ball up at the end like that. To me, like, you know, I would have been comfortable with Drew Holiday doing it. So it's funny for a Heat team that was basically 8 minutes away from being eliminated in a playing game against Chicago, and was one of the poor three-point shooting teams this league, although they had a good month of March. What they were able to do, you know, in these wins against Milwaukee, whether it been, you know, basically they've dusted Duncan Robinson off, what they've gotten, you know, certainly Butler, Lowry, Caleb Martin. I mean, it's incredible to be in a position here. And I would say this, I was in Brooklyn in 2013 when we went down 3-1 to Chicago, and I was talking with Mark, and we were talking about like the greatest performances, and that game four was a Nate Robinson game when he went off and we lost in triple overtime.
Yes.
And when people say, well, can teams come back from 3-1? Yes, they can. I mean, we came back and evened the series. We stole game six in Chicago and came home for game seven. But the problem is we had exerted so much energy to come back from 3-1 that there was nothing left in the tank. So can Milwaukee come back? Yes, they can. But man, they're going to have to. Miami's not going into Milwaukee laying down. Like, if there's a chance to eliminate them in Milwaukee and not rely on coming at home, they're going to do it.
Especially because you just don't know how Giannis's back is going to be. Like, he looked okay to me, but the thing with the injured back is you can't really tell. And, you know, I think it was worrisome that last night after the game, he didn't talk to the media.
Yeah.
Which leads me to believe that he was getting some serious treatment. Giannis always talks to the media, always. Yeah. Even when he doesn't want to, you know, he's generally good natured about it. And Giannis isn't a guy who ducks, who's afraid of like tough questions or whatever. So that was worrisome to me that Giannis didn't speak to the media. And not only that, they didn't announce that Giannis wasn't speaking to the media until over an hour after the game. Again, this is not normal situation. So it makes me worry about his back. And you know, the Heat, they're playing, as you mentioned, Bobby, they're a playing team. Now look, I don't want to compare the Heat or the Lakers to the Mavericks, because the Mavericks were in a free fall. Whereas the Lakers have been playing very strongly, and the Heat, you know, certainly had belief in their experience, and they were getting healthier. But like, if you want to know why there's a reason why teams still go for the play-in, here's your answer. Because we've got two play-in teams in position to advance. And yeah, there's circumstances. Yeah, there's injuries. But that's the NBA. That's why you get into the playoffs.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Winning is an everyday mindset. And on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure, by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. So, Bobby, the reason I wanted you to come on here today was because there's been this sort of cloud on the horizon for the Bucks throughout the whole season. And they've been so good. They've been, you know, the best team since January 1st or whatever. They've been so impressive. They were my, you know, I didn't make a pick, but I felt like they were my favorites to win the championship. They still can win it. But there's been this thing that's been out there with this coming off season. And they've got all of a sudden, and this happens with any team that competes for a long period of time. I wondered, without burying the Bucks, you know, they still have two of the three at home. Still have a great team. We'll see about Giannis. At some point, the Bucks season is going to be over and they're going to have this. And so now I think we need to discuss what exactly is on the table as the Bucks face elimination here for what they've got this offseason.
Well, there's a lot. I mean, you've got a change in ownership, right? That's one of the things. So you went from Mark Lazary, who sold his percent, to Jimmy Haslam, who's the owner of the Browns. For me, I think for the state of the roster is that how much does ownership want to continue to spend keeping the starting five intact, right? Like that's the big thing. So what does that mean? Well, Brook Lopez is a free agent. Okay. Coming off, he's going to see his name on one of these all defensive teams, having a career year, turned 35 in April. He's extension eligible. You can go up to 3 for 54 by June 30th. Can't do 4 because of the over 38 rule. Chris Middleton, player option,
but he'd become a free agent.
He can become a free. Yeah. Brooke will become a free agent. And you can re-sign him there. The biggest thing for me is what happens with Chris Middleton. Okay. He's got a $40 million player option here. Coming off an injury plague season. I mean, the last year and a half, I mean, he's basically has had more injuries than his first like 6 or 7 years in Milwaukee. He's hit a point where he's regressed from offensively shooting the ball here. Does he opt in and do you look to extend him? For me, I think if you're Milwaukee, you're looking to probably have him decline that option and maybe sign him to a lower number. I mean, would he come back at $30 million per year with length? And then, Brian, there's the big question come September, Giannis. That's the big question. Extension eligible again, right? Doesn't it feel like he just signed that Supermax contract? He's extension eligible. He can sign an additional 3 years to his deal here. There's a lot of questions. They're right near the luxury tax. They're about $5 million below. That doesn't include Lopez. They are a repeater tax team, meaning that they're in 4 out of 5. They'll be in 4 or 5 years. Significant cost. They don't have a draft pick. The Jay Crowder trade has not turned out for them. I mean, he got a DMP last night. I didn't see him out there. And so you're limited. You've got 8 or 9 free agents. So you're limited as far as your other guys. But for me, it starts with Lopez. It's Middleton. And then, of course, Giannis in September.
So Giannis has 2 years left on his contract. I don't want to create any sort of false narrative here or anything, but if Giannis has an extension situation that comes up and he doesn't sign it, it's a worry. And if he doesn't sign it, what does that mean? What do you do? And if you're not able to retain both Middleton and Lopez, or if you're not able to sign and trade one of them and your team might take a step back and then he doesn't extend, what do you do? And I'm going to throw one more on there, Bobby. I believe Drew Holiday is extension eligible.
Not until February. So okay. He's got a little bit, there's a little bit of a buffer here because he did that, his other extension in April of 2021, I believe. So there's a little more of it, but it is during the year. Like there'll be a point in not in the off season, but come February, where there's going to be a decision there too.
Yeah. And I think you ask yourself, Spears, you know, why did Mark Lazary sell now? This is a team. Mark Lazary was the governor of the team, only owned about 25%, 28%, something like that. But he was the governor of the team, controlling governor. And the team has a championship, has Giannis under contract. They're playing great, you know, real good chance to win the title this year. Why does Mark Lazary sell?
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Well, first off, he got $3.5 billion valuation. He didn't get $3.5 billion. He got, you know, whatever, a quarter of that. But the point is they bought the team for, I think, $700 million, and he sold the team for $3.5, or actually, I think it was maybe $3.2. But he got, like, you know, in a decade, he increased the value, you know, he increased his money like 4.5 times. Okay.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, because he saw everything that Bobby just said here, he saw, and getting that price with this, you know, sort of this freight train coming at him, because the real challenge here, Spears, is regardless of what happens in game five, the Bucks are going to have to refresh the roster. Giannis is in his mid 20s. Holiday's in his 30s. Milton is in his 30s. Lopez is in his 30s. They're going to have to refresh the roster around Giannis, and they don't have the draft picks to do it. They don't have the money to do it, and the new rules make it even harder. So I don't want to overreact here, but I don't think it's responsible to not point
this
out.
This is alert time.
Yeah.
Hit the alarm. And I'm kicking myself for a couple things. You'll laugh at this. Like, Lazary's a great guy. I'm sad to see him go. And I was like, yeah, I mean, at some point during the playoffs, I really want to sit down and talk to you about you moving on. And he's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't think I need to make that call or get that lunch in the first round, right?
Yeah, and I'm sure he didn't either.
Yeah, and I've worked on this story about Giannis and his brother and the charity that they're doing in their father's name, right? And I go into the locker room yesterday, and I see Thanasis, and I'm like, dude, do I have to run this story in the first round? Like, I thought this could be like a finals preview thing for me or something like that. Bit of a Eastern Conference, right? It's running tomorrow.
Oh, man.
That story's running on Wednesday now. Like, I can't sit on it anymore because 3-1, like, could this be the greatest upset in playoff history?
Like, I don't know, Bobby, because
where was the Heat?
I mean, that Dallas team losing that year to Golden State was a tough one, right?
And they were healthy. See, Giannis.
But where were the Heat in this play-in thing? Like, where were they? I'm trying to remember.
They were the eighth. They were
seven. Heat. Mine was seven. Yeah, Atlanta was the eight.
Right. Okay, so they were not your typical eight seed. They're probably a better.
Miami is. They are the perfect playoff team. They are not an 82 game team, right? How that roster, like, basically you're hoping to get 60 games out of Jimmy, 65 games. You're hoping to get 50 games out of Kyle. You're managing, like they are the perfect in a 50 game season. I would take that team any day of the week. In the playoffs, if they just get in, I'm taking them. And then you got the hero injury too, but
yeah.
Man, I did not expect. I mean, as I said, like, I wrote their offseason article 2 weeks ago. It's been sitting. It's going to need a rewrite. The introductory is brutal. It is brutal. And I'm going to have to, you know, there's going to be a rewrite on that here, even if they lose, just based on kind of how, you know, how this series has gone.
Yeah. And is Milwaukee, is Giannis attractive enough to get people to come to Milwaukee?
No.
Like, they got to do everything trade or draft, so. Right?
Yes.
I mean, although, you know, Chris probably stays if they want to take care of him. And
yeah, I think, there's a window to do that. The question is, as Bobby just said, with new ownership and with the repeater tax and all the new rules, is about whether they're going to spend it.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about Miami, like, you know, here's the thing. Pat Riley does not believe in a full rebuild. He doesn't believe in, like, tearing down. He believes, I know one of his former players told this to me. He said, Pat believes in ABC, always be competing. And he thinks that you draw people by showing that you can compete, even when you're not holding the best hand. So, like, the year that they got Bosch and LeBron, they made the playoffs that year. They were in a full cap space, saving mode. In fact, midway through that year, I think Wade and Riley like had cross words with each other through the media because Wade wanted help right there. And Riley's like, no, we're going to wait. And I think they get like the sixth seed and like were very competitive and lost in the first round, I think to Atlanta, something like that. And here we are again. Like, I think the Heat are on the cusp of looking for another star maneuver. I would put them on the list for Dame Lillard if Dame ends up getting traded. If he goes to market, I think the Heat are on that list. I don't know if they have enough. You know, a lot of their offer would be built around Tyler Hero, who's just injured. But I suspect, I don't know for sure, just to be clear, I don't know for sure that they would offer him, but I would suspect that that would be the type of thing, that and draft picks. But part of the way you attract guys who want to play there is to always be competing. And, you know, in 2020, they were in the finals. I don't remember what
well,
they did.
Well, being in Miami doesn't hurt either.
Well, exactly. That's what I'm saying. They can get people. You know,
there's like, that part.
Trust me.
Yeah.
I got off the plane on Sunday night. And I'm like, oh, this is nice. I haven't felt 80 degree heat in a long time. This is all right.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty darn impressive in Phoenix right now. Late spring in, I guess mid spring in Phoenix. It's nice.
Yeah, okay. But wait a month in Phoenix.
No, I know. Trust me. You have to tell me. I'm well aware. So like a lot of stakes in that Bucks situation. Now, Kevin Pelton, because there's been this number flying around for the last couple of days as all these series have gone through four games, that if you're up 3-1, it's 95% historically to win. Pelton points out that if you're the higher seeded team, you're down 3-1, meaning you've got game five at home and game seven possibly at home, you have a little bit better chance. I think his numbers show that you have a 11% chance. It's happened a little bit more. So it is, but it is worth pointing out that Milwaukee, they're only down one break, so to speak. Yeah. They have to come back and take game six. Of course, they got to win game five. They only won one game.
And but can Jimmy now continue to do this on one day's rest?
Well, the same goes for those guys. They're, I mean, yeah. Lowry.
But I do think they have more, assuming Giannis is all right, they have more weapons. You know what I mean? They got more. They're a better team. Bam has it. I mean, Bam, you know, but Bam steps up too, which he didn't have.
Well, Bam's got a mild, was it an ankle injury? He's listed as probable, but he's a hamstring. He's banged up somewhere. I don't remember off the top of my head.
And I can see it, you know, but then like Jimmy's got to carry that load for them to get past this.
Okay, Spears, you've been at this Warriors Kings series. It's been incredible. The rating came out for the game on Sunday. It was the highest rated, most watched NBA playoff in this round since 2001, I think.
Mm-hmm. More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Anyway, it's the best rating since the Shaq Kobe Lakers in this round. Yeah. Obviously, a lot of people are very interested in it.
7.5 million viewers, peaking at 10.4 million at 6 p.m. Eastern.
And what was the highest rating in this round since when?
Kobe, Shaq versus Blazers in 2002.
Yeah.
21 years.
So, Spears, what's your viewpoint of where things are at? I saw some video today of the reporters who were in Sacramento. De'Aaron Fox has got a splint on that broken index tip, fingertip. He didn't look like he was shooting it real well, but the game wasn't today. The game is tomorrow.
Yeah.
So what's your feel?
You know, respectively to the great people, Kings PR, who have done an amazing job this year. It's a new group. They've done an amazing job this year. That list of doubtful was laughable to me. Right? Like,
well, that's the team setting it.
Yeah, that, like, Becky, Shannon, Michael, y'all all done a great job. But doubtful? I just knew from talking to De'Aaron Fox from the beginning of the season, man, like, he wants it so bad. He would damn near play on fire if he had to. In a wheelchair if he had to. Like, he wants this too bad. And so, like, it just never registered with me on this injury, not even talking to him, not seeing him, that there was any chance that he wouldn't play. Now, how he plays, I don't know, but, like, I just felt like no matter what, he's going to give it a try. That's him. This ain't, load management, I got to be 110% kind of guy. He wants this so bad. He wants this upset so bad for himself, for Vivek, for the city of Sacramento, for the Light the Beam posse, whoever you want to, like, love Sacramento. He wants this bad. And this is his moment. This is his time and Avery too. Avery put doubtful too. Let me throw him in there. He wants this stage. He wants this international stage. He wants people to know who he is. He hasn't had a chance to show. Brian, you've been talking about him too. I've seen this greatness for him for years, but this is the first time the world is getting to see it. There's no way he's not going out there. Oh, okay. What is he going to be? What happens if he gets hit? I don't know. But De'Aaron Fox, I never once thought that he wasn't going to play.
Bobby, his stats are wild in this series. 31.5 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists, 2.5 steals per game. Shooting 10 threes a game, hitting, you know, on 34%.
Is there anybody else playing better in the playoffs right now?
Booker is, I mean, I've been on this series. Yeah. This series hasn't been as watched. Booker's averaging 35, yeah. 2 steals and almost 2 blocks. Pretty and good. Basically playing point guard. And, pretty you good. Know, like, his teammates are like, he's never played better. And when I asked him, I go, have you ever played better? He's like, I've always been this good at defense. And I'm like, well, if you say so. But Bobby, like, half of De'Aaron Fox is better than none at all. But I do wonder, this series is so tight. It's so tight. If he is diminished a little bit, I wonder if that's the decider. And I hate that that would be the decider.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting how much, you know, him out there. Is there the point, like I felt like in the Laker Memphis game 3, that when, the game they got blown out, that job being out there kind of hurt them in the beginning just because he couldn't get a grip of the ball. That's going to be something to watch in Sacramento as far as, is he better off just having him out there, his impact, but is he hurting you, right? Not defensively, but certainly on offense. But that's a hard call from Mike Brown. I think for me, with Sacramento is that, like, I don't buy into the notion that there's all this pressure on them going into game 5. I felt there's been pressure on them since game 1. Like, I felt like game 1 and game 2 were must wins. Like you are not losing a home game and then have to go out and steal a game in Golden State, because
yeah.
that series was going to be over. So, like, I've always felt there was must, and I think they've played like it's a must win. And you're right. I mean, this series, I mean, it's an Andrew Wiggins 3 in the corner away from being different, and it's a Harrison Barnes 3 from being different. Right.
They're really the only win. This game, next game's a must win for Sac too.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. You know, like, so yeah, I mean, we don't like the De'Aaron Fox being injured is not how we want to see this series end here. But as Mark said, like, basically you're going to have to lock him in a vault for him not to be out there here. But that's, I mean, he's been their engine and he's made big shots. And that's always been the question, right? Put him in a playoff series. Can he make big shots? And he has, he's lived yes. up to it.
Lived up to all yes. billing, all billing.
Yeah. And I mean, good for him. I don't think the Kings, just to be clear here, I don't think the Kings can lose this series. I don't mean like that the Warriors won't win. I mean, I don't see how the Kings don't come out of this like up because of what this experience has been.
I'll tell you this, they'll never be in a spot, at least for now, for the next few years, where draft prospects don't want to go there and work out. You know, I mean, listen, like it was like a doomsday organization. Nobody ever wanted to go there to work out and go through the draft and all that process. Like if I'm a free agent out there and, you know, they're limited as far as what they have in money, like those places, like I want to play in that building with 19,000 people. Yeah. And I want to play with Fox and Sabonis and that group there. So it's more of kind of a destination than kind of like that dead end team.
Well, they could have cap space, right, Bobby? But
yeah, they're
going to probably re-sign Harrison Barnes.
Yeah, they could have room to renegotiate Sabonis if they wanted to, but that cost them probably Barnes and Lyles, who's Trey Lyles has been good. You know,
he's
I heard Trey loves it there and wants to be there.
Yeah,
I mean, like it's kind of like Utah in a sense where. Well, actually, no, it's not like Utah. This is the only thing they got there. And I think people are being reminded that. Like, this is, they got their soccer team. It's cute. Yeah, they got, you know, minor league baseball and all that. But this is King's country. And I think, like, some of the players are realizing, like, Sabonis, I think he also has a home in the Napa area. Like, Bay Area is, like, less than a two-hour ride. Like, I actually had to, mess with Mike the other day because he was like hyping up Sacramento, Mike Brown, and I'm like, it's still Sacramento, Mike. You know what I mean? Like, Kings fans might get bad for me saying that. This is a somebody from the Bay.
No,
comment,
you're bona fide for the Kings fans. They got your back.
Like they know it's not Camelot there, right? You know, but that environment, the love, the way they bleed purple there. Now you see it. It's back. And even like the Warriors had to ban the cowbells from going into Chase, which I thought was funny. Like it's like Bobby said, it's a fun place to go. Mike is doing an amazing job. Vivek is, you know, finally getting some positive just do, right? And I can see guys wanting to be there. They play a fun brand of basketball. And one thing that Mike Brown does great is he's honest. Like, there's no gray area. You know where you stand with that team. And, like, Bobby knows as a, you know, somebody's been in the front office for years, like, honesty is so important with these guys. And I think that's – it makes it you may not exactly like what the coach has to say, but you know where you stand. And I think Mike makes it a great place for those guys to play.
Yeah. And we haven't even talked about the Warriors who hit them with a bunch of swings the other night and connected on a lot, and still they were right there. So like, if nothing else happens, the Kings have earned everybody's respect. I know that's not what they want. They want to go to the next round. But the thing is, like, Memphis, I'm not ruling out Memphis because the Lakers are so inconsistent, but even if Memphis looks terrible right now to me. And so like, not terrible, but they're not themselves at all. And obviously Ja is hurt, but they're just not playing the way they've played all year. And some of the decisions that are being made are just wild. And if I was a Grizzlies fan, I would be banging my head against the wall watching that game four. So many different things that they, you know, they could not hit a shot. You know, they traded for Luke Kennard in midseason. He's sitting over there. They won't put him in the game. Ja just would rather try to climb LeBron than throw a pass. It is just wild. But you know, if you're the Warriors, you're looking at it. If they get two more wins here, there's a decent chance they're going to have home court. And I know that series potentially against the Lakers is, they're going to get it back.
These playoffs are nuts, man. These playoffs are nuts.
I mean, I wouldn't,
The Knicks or the Cavaliers are going to have home court, right? In the next round, possibly.
The Garden is crazy right now, and they may be hosting round two, game one, in a few days. Bobby, I don't know what
Knicks
you...
The Knicks could be in the East Finals. Ain't that something?
Well, I'm not giving anybody anything. They got to win a bunch of games for that.
Could.
Yeah.
Could.
Bobby, when you look at the Grizzlies, what do you think they do? And what do you think they do with Dylan Brooks?
Well, I wrote them last night. I stayed up and wrote it. And that's the million-dollar question. 13 players under contract. Him and Xavier Tillman are the only free agents. Tillman's got a team option in his contract here. Probably one of the more polarizing negotiations or free agencies that we will see in a long time with Dylan Brooks. I mean, we all know that they made it an effort at the deadline to try to upgrade the small forward position. They've got all their draft picks. They've got a Golden State pick. They've got a boatload of guys in that, that $2 to $15 million range of tradable contracts here. What is the market for Dylan Brooks outside of Memphis? Like that's the million-dollar question, right? What is the market for?
I think they like the player, but the character, I'm not sure that there's much desire for that.
Well, no. And I said, I don't want to give away the article, but I said like, hey, any team would want Bane, Ja, Jaren Jackson, three players on it. And there would be a line of teams out there wanting those two guys. However, at the end of the day, like talent can get you only so far, right? Like maturity, discipline, like all that other stuff that comes with it overshadows what these guys have been able to do here. And it's an offense that, I mean, the offense ranked in the bottom 15 of offensive efficiency, 21st in 3-point shooting. That's why you said they went out and got Luke Kennard and he's glued to the bench here. And I mean, for me with Dylan Brooks, like I mean, there's probably a walkaway number. And I think for Memphis, it's, what is it? $14, $15 million. Is that a walkaway number? Because you've got Desmond Bane, who's extension eligible this offseason.
Yeah, he's going to get
the costs are, so when you look at Memphis, so we got to look at Ja hitting all NBA, right? So that takes $7 million, another $7 million. Never paid the tax in history with Robert Parr.
They did pay it once.
Under him, I think. So it's like, so for me, there's a walkaway number I think there's a number in my mind. It's probably 13, 14 million. He probably wouldn't take that because it's a little bit north of the non-tax mid-level. But as I said, like what's the market? Is it does Houston take a swing? Is it Detroit? Is it, you know, some of these Indiana, San Antonio, any of these other teams that have cap space. I don't know that right now.
I did do a piece on Robert Pera's wealth last year because I don't think people know much about him. He's worth more than $14 billion. Now, just because he's worth it. When he bought the team, he barely was able to put the deal together, but his business has taken off since then. He is wealthy enough if he chooses to pay the tax. He is one of the five richest owners in the NBA, give or take, you know. But that said, you don't want to assume that, you know, he doesn't speak publicly, hasn't spoke publicly in years. So I don't know what his intentions are.
I was at a wedding with him.
Is that right? In the Bay?
Yeah.
He's from the Bay Area, right?
So. One of my old San Jose State teammates, Terry Cannon, got married and he used to work for Robert, and Robert came to the wedding and I got to spend like an hour talking to him, and I haven't talked to him ever since.
He owns like
nice super guy.
He's a really good basketball player. I mean, amongst owners, I think
is that saying a lot? I don't think Stan Kroenke's out there shooting threes. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I think
Steve
Jordan,
Ballmer.
Yeah. Well,
God,
I just
Steve
know.
Ballmer.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's a rough pill to swallow. I mean
that guy in Charlotte's pretty good.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I'm here, and you know, I'm here with the Clippers, and the Clippers' payroll this year, including tax, was $330 million. You know,
us comparing that to Ballmer, that's like us taking $20 out of our wallet.
Ballmer, I always say this, Ballmer makes almost I'm sorry if you guys heard me say this again, but I just want to remind you. Ballmer makes $900 million a year just in Microsoft dividends. Like 800, you know, depending on the, you know, where the dividend is, it's like 900 million.
Ballmer so, also got his players crab legs in the preseason. We're going
to try. Bobby, Mark's, he went, Mark went on this jag last week because he's still affected by the post game crab legs when they were in Seattle in the preseason
Bobby, the Nets never got that.
You know, it's fun. Quick, funny story. When we went through a phase in New Jersey, this is when Cliff Robinson was on a roster. We used to get our meals on our plane catered by like Ruth Chris and Morton's. And like, we went through a real phase of just blowing the budget through the roof.
This is on the Mikhail Prokhorov dime, or
This is Bruce Ratner before the market crashed. And, So we would get like all these PF Chang, all these restaurants, and the New York Times did a piece on it. And Exposed. I remember Cliff saying like, yeah, it's good, but like, well, you know, we don't need this stuff. Like, you know, it's undercooked and it's all that. It's like, oh my God, Cliff, you're not helping. You're not helping me, man.
Cliffy sometimes had the munchies. Is that what you're? Yeah. I do remember.
He wanted juniors. He wanted you to get juniors.
My
fries and hamburgers from juniors.
Right after Dan Gilbert bought the Cavs in 2005, he upgraded everything. And I was covering the team, and the team was in a free fall. They had been like in first place and they were free falling out of the playoffs. And they had this terrible loss. I can't remember where it was, but they had this terrible loss. And Brendan Malone was the coach. Paul Siles had been fired. Brendan Malone was the coach. And on TV, it had shown that several players at the end of the bench were laughing the night before. And people in Cleveland were upset because they were in this free fall. They were getting a bad loss and the players were laughing. I mean, who knows what it was over. So the next day at practice, I remember the practice was in Philadelphia. And I asked Brendan, I go, hey, the cameras caught some guys on the end of the bench laughing that, you know, when you guys lost last night, you know, do you have anything to say about that? And Brendan, Michael Malone's father, longtime assistant, won titles with Chuck Daly when he was with the Pistons. And he has a very dry sort of wit and sense of humor. And he goes, I don't know, maybe they heard you're getting crab legs on the plane. because apparently they did. So there you go, Spurs. It's been going on for a long time. I don't know what the Grizzlies got on their plane ride home today to Memphis, but you know, this is one of the things I've been talking about all year, is that there's so many teams are so heavily invested in this season. There's going to be fallout for some of these teams. There's not enough success available. Milwaukee is one of them we're just talking about. Clippers, I don't know what's going to happen there. I don't know what's going to happen with Memphis. I don't know what's going to happen when, you know, assuming Boston gets one more win, when somebody's going to lose Philly-Boston. I don't know what's going to happen there. And we're starting to see that those things are coming in. And as Bobby's, you know, end of season summer stories are like coming in, you're starting to see some of the stress that's coming, you know? So,
and they're sensational, Bobby. Great work, brother.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I sometimes get to see a advanced preview of them. So,
yes, I have the 3-4. We got four. How many elimination games we got Wednesday? Oh no, Golden State's not elimination. We got three. They'll be coming to you guys soon.
The Grim Reaper stories.
Oh man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is, you guys know real quick when you write these articles, then you kind of have like this quiet interest in like, I don't want an extended series, right? Like you don't want teams all of a sudden coming back just for your own personal. You know, I don't want another 4 hours writing. The Lakers.
We all have our own personal things. I'll be honest. I've got two flights booked for the morning. One's to Los Angeles, because you know that's where Game 6 would be, and one is home. And I know which one I'd prefer to be on. No offense to anybody here, as I'm in the Clippers interview room. All right. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you, Spears, as always, for your time. Thanks to Jackson, our producer, for putting it together. We'll see what happens tonight, and we will see what happens tomorrow. We'll talk to you later this week.